This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batzer. Conrad Black is here. He writes for the National Post. He's also very helpful for guiding me through the intricacies of Canadian politics. You will remember, Canada has a new prime minister. His name is Mark Carney, and he's a central banker. He comes to the office with credentials that are extremely vivid about being a green advocate, very green, when he was at the Canadian Central Bank, when he was at the English, the UK Central Bank. He's also a man who's identified with the liberal side of the Liberal Party of Canada and owes his election to the big votes in and around Ontario. But, Conrad, a very good evening to you. There's reason to begin to believe that Mark Carney didn't mean it, or if he did, he's a man who goes with the parade, which is toward prosperity. So I'll ask the big, tough question. Does Mark Carney believe that Canada can do better with its GDP than it is right now? Does he believe you've got growth in you? Good evening to you.
Yeah, good evening to you, John. Yes, he believes, in fairness to him, in his published remarks, he all the time I've known about him, he has been a believer in economic growth. Now, he muddied the waters by devising what, in my opinion, and the opinion of many others, is complete fantasy land, that you could reconcile economic growth, fiscal and monetary policies with an extremely aggressive green program, which essentially took the shape of a maximum effort to reduce use of fossil fuels, never mind that Canada has immense reserves of oil and gas, and readily available, and still achieve economic growth. Well, now that he is actually in the head of a government, as well as the head of a political enterprise or leader of a political party, he is a man of sufficient intelligence to examine carefully his previous assumption that you could reconcile an aggressive green policy with economic growth. And we're all sitting up here holding our breath, waiting to see how he comes down on this. Because if he either he's going to give up on economic growth or he's going to vastly scale back his green program. And we're just waiting for the shoe to drop. But the fact is we're waiting for it, meaning he didn't charge ahead and saddle us with a great deal more green regulation, raising everyone's cost of gasoline in their cars and home heating fuel in the winter and that sort of thing. So, we're all waiting for him now.
Your new column in the National Post doesn't just address what Canada needs. It also talks about the European Union and how growth in the European Union has been disappointing these last decades. It was originally, I believe, a way of France and Germany dealing with their steel and coal output, as I recall. But it's evolved into a trade organization that has to make some choices. Does Europe believe in prosperity, and does that influence Canada more than the United States?
On the second question, no. Europe does not have as much influence on Canada as the U.S. does, not only because of proximity and not only because the U.S. is more successful, but, we are a large country like the U.S. with similar resources, except we don't have a tropical part to us. And so it's a much easier comparison than the large number of comparatively smaller countries in Europe. And second, of course, Canada's a 70% English-speaking country. Also in Europe, the equation is complicated because of the terrible political problems in that continent in the 20th century. They were essentially influencing to a point of domination the entire world at the beginning of the 20th century. And Europe gave us communism, it gave us Nazism, it gave us fascism, and it gave us two terrible world wars. And as a result, all of Europe west of Russia now wants to stand on each other's shoulders and reassume a very important position in the world. But the problem is it isn't really democracy in the sense that the British or the Canadians or the Americans mean it. The commissioners in Europe, once they're chosen, and they're chosen and not elected, they're just nominated by the constituent governments, they don't have to answer to the Parliament of Europe, which has no authority at all. It's just a talking shop, like a university debating society. And so it's a different system, and it's really run by these authoritative bureaucrats with vast power structures in the bureaucracy of the so-called European Union government in Brussels. And in most of the constituent countries never voted for that. That's why England departed. They voted for a common market, Britain did, the United Kingdom, but not for a federal union. And you know, Britain has gradually developed its political system over 800 years, and they didn't want to just chuck it out in favor of what Brussels came up with a few years ago. And I'm sorry to be so loquacious here, but the Europeans are now discovering that they do have a way of avoiding conflict with each other, which is a great thing. They do have a way of taking care of the disadvantaged to avoid revolutions and disorder, which is a good thing. But they're going to have to fine-tune it because they don't have really any economic growth other than in those areas that are making a comeback from their days as communist countries like Poland and Czechoslovakia. So they have to, you know, they have a different problem than what we have in North America. They have to get economic growth back without stirring up disorder in the public of a kind that has been so terribly damaging in Europe. Here, we've always been prosperous in Canada and the U.S. I mean, we had the Depression and so on, but they've always basically been rich countries since the settlers first established themselves. And we just have to do more of a good thing.
All right. So they're the two examples of the West. Altogether, there's transparency, there's honesty, there's reporting, there's demand for prosperity altogether. However, there are two models here. One is the U.S., especially under Donald Trump, we're going to grow and grow and grow. That's what it's about.
Yep.
All right. Europe is hesitating. It wants to, but it hasn't put it in action yet. Canada has a choice between them, or does Canada heat towards the U.S. side? Can you tell right now under Mr. Carney?
Yeah, Canada would definitely, the popular preference would be not a replication of the U.S., but much closer to the U.S. model than the British or European.
And is that admitted? Does Mr. Carney and his supporters, do they admit that they want to make money?
Yes, they do. Now, they would say that they won't go as far as the U.S., but they would say that they put that objective foremost. I mean, look, we've never had any civil disturbance in this country, seriously.
Right.
We didn't have a civil war. We didn't have anyone secede like Ireland seceded from Britain. I mean, there has been practically, I mean, in the whole history of Canada, going back 200 years, there have been three political murders in the history of the country. And they were shocking things when they happened, but two of them were in the 19th century. We had one since 1867.
I'm satisfied if you say you want to make money, because then we can get together on this. Conrad Black, writing about the West is the best, but still Canada. Okay.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.